Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Thursday morning, 13 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue today. It's the Roundtable panel, and before we introduce the panel, I invite you to join us by emailing us a brief point on topic. You've heard the rules if you've listened to this program ad nauseum. Don't include links. We can't click the links on the air. Don't use abbreviations. Proofread everything you send.
Civility.
Sarcasm is tough in a printed word.
Civility.
Civility's nice. One email per customer per day. And it's panel@wamc.org if you would like to join us. Panel@wamc.org. Great panel today. Dan Irizarry is here, chairman of Capital District Latinos. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. How are you?
Nice to have you back on the program.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Judy Patrick, fresh from a stint on the Media Project in Studio D, vice president for editorial development at New York Press Association. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning. Glad to be here. Beautiful day.
Are you worn out from the media show?
It was a tough one. In fact, people should listen Sunday evening because we went back and forth and we hashed out a lot of things and came to no real good, strong conclusion.
The important thing is, did you give Shar Talk a hard time?
Shar Talk gave Dr. Kaylin Brown from the College of St. Rose quite a hard time and eventually apologized. So it was something to listen to.
Fireworks flying. Splendid. Jim Hendler's here. Jim, by the way, is director of the Rensselaer Institute for Data Exploration and Applications. We just call him the Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences. And also tetherless and has been untethered for years. Alan Shartok is here. He's the president and CEO of this station. Hello, sir. How you doing?
Hello. I'm so tired. I've been... Oh, God.
Oh, well. And here we go. Why are you tired?
Well, you know, you get up at 3:30. That's when I got up this morning, 3:30. Then you do some commentary on the air. Then you come in here and you know, you're on the Media Project. And before the Media Project, we had something else, didn't we?
You had a Capital Connection.
Oh, yeah, Capital Connection with Mike Giannaris.
Oh, how did that go? Little friction there between he and the governor.
Not a little. A lot.
Yeah.
A lot. And he teased me when we first came on, and he said, "How's your new best friend, the governor?" Yeah, see, there was that.
Okay. And how did you handle that?
Well,
did you swear?
No.
Good. Good for you.
No, I'm not a swearer.
Oh, really?
Well, okay.
As far as you know.
In the newsroom, we do tend to talk in the people's language.
But Judy can tell you that's what news people do.
They used to. We're a little bit more refined nowadays, but back in the day.
Well, back in the day, all the reporters had a bottle of bourbon in the bottom drawer, right?
We all had cigarettes in our mouth, except me. But yeah,
you never smoked.
Never smoked.
Good for you.
But a lot of smoking, drinking later in the night. They all went to bars at the end of the shift, and none of that happens anymore.
The good old days.
And one of you guys used to show up here to volunteer. He didn't want you to know he was here, but he came in his pajamas when we called out for volunteers during the fun drive.
Really?
Yep.
From the Gazette?
Yes. Can't use his name.
Oh, why?
What'd you say?
Why? He's not there anymore, right?
Well, I don't know where he is or what he is, but I don't know. Yeah.
Certainly not in his pajamas.
Wasn't anybody who helped?
Oh, you want to ask 20 questions
now?
Let's move on. Okay. Before we get started with the topics at hand, Alan, I guess we're doing all right in the old lock box.
Well, we are doing okay. Actually, Maverick, we're doing very well. We have raised now $700,932.
Say it again.
709-132.
That's pretty good.
Thank you, dear Judy. You are so wonderful, and you have saved me once again.
When is the fun drive?
It's Monday.
Ah.
And so we'll be here bright and early. Alan will be...
And what about you, Ray?
I'll be here, but you do the monologue for about half an hour, so I think I'm going to show up a little bit later.
Quick nap.
You'll be there.
Pajamas on?
No.
Ray will
Nobody wants to see that.
He'll be eating an illegal chocolate donut, which I will give him hell about.
The good stuff.
But any case, that's a lot of money.
And you could still pledge online at WAMC.org.
We're counting on everybody to do everything you can. Go to WAMC.org, and put your money, put another nickel in the Nickelodeon.
Ah, Teresa Brewer.
World I think is loving you.
Right.
And music.
And thank you for not singing it. We appreciate that very much. I don't know if you guys saw the Buffalo News. Trump's advice for worried upstate New Yorkers, go to another state. President Trump continues to have blunt message for upstate New York residents who are worried about the region's economy. Get out. Meeting with reporters from regional news outlets from around the country. Wednesday, Trump offered detailed comments in response to questions about his August 2017 statement that upstate residents should consider leaving. And he said, quote, if New York isn't going to treat them better, I would recommend they go to another state where they can get a great job. He portrayed New York residents as victims of state government.
Where to begin?
Yeah, where to begin? Well, what's interesting is how he's told the people down in coal country, stay where you are. We'll bring your jobs to you. You don't have to leave your state for better jobs. And by the way, upstate New York, you guys should leave. Consistency. I really like Trump because of his consistency.
Well, not only that, the governor has announced, our governor, Governor Cuomo, my newer friend, has announced that that we are losing a lot of tax money because of SALT, state and local taxes, which can no longer be deducted from people's income tax. I think you can deduct $10,000. Nevertheless, and he's blaming it on the president. He says he's doing it because this is a blue state. And he's doing it to us and to California and to, Massachusetts, not Texas. And he's right, of course. It is so malevolent.
Isn't he president of all 50 states?
Just the red ones.
Voted for him?
Well, he said, I love those. This is, again, quoting from the Buffalo News. I love those people, Trump said, of upstate residents. Those people are my voters. They've been treated very badly. He says the problem is that the states that have been really well run and don't have debt, those states have a big advantage over states that have been poorly run, like New York and others, and have a tremendous amount of debt.
Isn't this the guy who said, I love debt? He's like the king of debt. Give me more debt. I mean, I don't get it.
And tied to this, I don't want to advance the program more than you want to advance it, is the fact that some joker from upstate has inevitably said it's time to
secede from the
Steve Hawley, assemblyman who represents parts of Genesee, Orleans, and Monroe counties.
He's a Republican.
He's a Republican.
He wants in the assembly, which has the power of warm spit.
He wants to divide New York in two. And this is quoting from a Buffalo TV, WKBW. It has become abundantly clear in recent years that the New York City voting bloc has forgotten upstate and is imposing their radical left-wing agenda on all of us, whether we like it or not. And Hawley said that in a letter to Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie late in January.
So the idea is upstate would get out from under New York City. And New York City has for many years also talked about splitting off because they feel too much of their money comes back up to upstate. I think the reality is it goes both ways. But of course, if you were in the assembly minority and you didn't have the power that I just referred to, you would say something like that.
But the assembly has always been Democrat. Well, not always.
Are you kidding? You're just not old enough. Okay. I remember when the assembly was red right from the beginning to the end. And all of a sudden, it just shifted.
But it's been a while.
Well, it depends on your relativity.
Well, in Steve Hawley's career,
for instance. It depends on the theory of relativity. Here I am, an old guy.
True.
And therefore, when you say it's been a while, it really...
Ray was too quick to say true. I don't know.
I'm just curious. None of this new attacking of New York could have anything to do with the Southern District prosecution stuff. Ooh. Could you think that, Trump has never been known to be vindictive against people who are, going after all of his
records? That's a great point.
Yeah, of course. I mean, suddenly New York is his enemy. Why? Just pure coincidence.
And remember that in order to get that job, the U.S. attorney for New York, for the Southern District, had to interview with Trump. So the fact that they are carrying so much of the load in all of this now and doing these prosecutions, potential prosecutions, is extraordinary.
As someone who was born and raised in upstate New York, I admit that I have always felt a little jealous of the money that I thought was going to New York City to pay for subways and, you know, all this. But as I've grown older, I realized that it does go both ways. There's a lot of the revenue that the New York State gets funds our state budget. I mean, it comes from New York City, especially from Wall Street. We are all one state. The capital is in Albany as much as so much of, despite the fact that so much business happens in New York City.
So let's just, Judy, get some definitions. Correct.
Yeah, let's get define upstate New York. Okay. That's the big
one. Here we go.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was the Yankees fans versus the Boston fans. Isn't that the dividing line?
No, upstate New York is defined as anything north of Yonkers. Or
according to whom,
Mount Vernon, according to me.
Okay.
Well, that's not true, but...
What is true?
Well, it's anything north of Westchester County, I think.
You think?
I think there are different definitions. People have different definitions of when it starts and when it ends.
I won't talk
even
about
even the state transportation, for instance, versus another state agency might define it differently. So I think that's a big part of the problem. What are you talking about exactly?
Well,
we've been saying that on this show for a long time.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Exactly. panel at WAMC.org if you would like to join the conversation. Panel at WAMC.org. One thing is clear. The governor of New York and the president of the United States are certainly
best buddies,
throwing some mud at one another.
And frankly, Ray, it works for both of them. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly works for the Trumpian base, mm-hmm. New Yorker Trump, by the way. And it certainly works for the governor, who just got a state senate elected on the backs, of Trump. So both guys are not stupid. They know where they are. And this morning in my conversation with Mike Gianaris, there's another thing that's going on here, and that's the question of Amazon and Bezos and whether or not the governor has done the right thing to give away that money.
But here's the thing that really strikes me. Wasn't it just the other day, it feels like a week, a month, a year, from the state of the state when our president was talking about unity and nonpartisanship?
Well, the State of the Union.
State of the Union.
No,
excuse me.
How do you say that? State of the Union.
State of the Union. Here he was declaring, you know, that we should all get together, hold hands, kumbaya, and then he's telling, 2 days later, he's telling people, get out of New York.
Yeah.
Of course, his kumbaya also included a little bit of attack on some of the recent New York legislation on reproductive rights and those kind of things.
That's the album version of the song.
Been going back and forth, yeah.
Richard Azzopardi, who is a senior advisor to Governor Cuomo.
Know him well. He was my student on the Legislative Gazette years ago.
He said, let's be real. Trump started an economic civil war between blue states and red states. That would not be unity.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as listeners do their income tax returns, it'll be interesting to see what they find, how much they have to pay in federal taxes this year versus last year.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
The sugar high is about to wear off, I think.
Well, in 2020, a lot of things go way up in 2020. So, in other words, this year won't be as good as last year, but next year, after the election, you're going to find what that tax bracket really looks like.
That 2020 is a very important date for a lot of reasons.
When you were talking to Gianaris today, give us some more specifics about his take on Amazon.
Well, as you know, he represents Long Island City, and he feels his constituents, this is very interesting, I think, at least I think so, his constituents live there, and a lot of them are going to be displaced because an apartment which used to be, I can't even imagine that this is cheap anymore, $1,000 a month, it's going to be $3,000 a month. And they know it. So they're going to be displacement in New York City and in Albany, by the way, has long existed. We know that. When they built the mall and did all of that
knocked
stuff.
Knocked down a lot of neighborhoods
to put the mall in.
That's right. So he has his finger on the pulse, he thinks. But there was a poll that was just taken which showed that 70% of the people who live there want Amazon and want this to happen. So when I asked them about that, because there's always this question as to whether a political leader follows or leads, and he said that was a nonsense poll, basically. Here's what happened. It was an Amazon poll. They took the poll themselves, and they asked the questions they wanted to ask, and they asked them in such a way. That's what he was saying. I thought that was interesting, don't you?
I think there's plenty of room upstate for Amazon to come, and nobody's going to complain about it.
There you go. That's a better move, right?
Well, there'll always be somebody to complain, Judy.
Well, yes, but not as many. And there's some wide open spaces. Nobody's going to be displaced. Probably some trees will be cut down. It's true. There's always some impact. You're right. But I think upstate could certainly use a nice Amazon headquarters.
Well,
I think
when we Albany split states, something. I mean, we're going to need that, right?
<That's> right.
Albany came up with a proposal. I think it involves a gondola.
That was a good plan. Yeah. A one-way gondola from Rensselaer. There you go.
But the whole thing about this Amazon thing is that it really is leading to some sparks between the governor and Mike Gianaris, which is one of the reasons we really wanted him on.
The governor was rather pointed when he was on with you this week on Midday Magazine.
Yeah, he was mean about that. And so that leads us to worry and to think about the state Senate and the state assembly. Now, the state Senate in New York was elected with a lot of new suburban people. They finally got enough around the gerrymander, right? It was gerrymandered. Mm. In 2022, there's going to be another gerrymander, but they have to wait to then. So the next election in New York State in 2020, although Trump is running and New Yorkers don't like Trump and all the rest of that, that's a significant. If they can get by that, the state Senate in New York will be Democratic for time immemorial.
I mean, we think
Isn't
Trump
that interesting?
Is running. We think Trump is running. Who knows what will happen in the next 2 years?
What do you think, Judy? You think that was interesting?
We have 20 seconds, Judy.
How the legislature pans out for the next 20 years is really important. But, you know, it's all Democratic now. Let's see what they get done this year. It seems like they're rolling along trying
they
to get
as
much
already.
Done as possible.
All right. This is a good point to take a break. Our email address is panel@wamc.org. Judy Patrick, Jim Hendler, and Dan Arizari are here along with Alan Shartok.
And don't forget the lockbox.
At wamc.org. You're listening to The Roundtable. We'll be right back. Yeah, that's nice. Thank you, Engineer Mike Bowen, for the Neil Hefti this morning. Oh, Neil Hefti, Hot and Hearty, 1956 release.
Whoa.
What a great. You know Neil Hefti, right?
I do. I was alive when he was. Were you?
Well, he only died 10 years ago.
Well, I'm talking about when he was at his peak.
Well, he, of course, was a great arranger for Woody Herman and Harry James, and, of course, Basie. He did so many great arrangements for Basie. Also, wrote the Odd Couple theme and Batman.
Woody and the Woodpeckers.
My God, Ray Graff knows so much.
I love Neil Hefti arrangements. This is I actually asked
Ray, but did you know that he invented the Hefti bag?
That is not true, Dan Arizari.
And a lot of people don't know that Ray is a great trombonist himself.
No, not at all. Chops are gone. What little I had are gone, man. Dan Arizari is here, chairman of Capital District Latinos. Jim Hendler, who is director of the Rensselaer Institute. That's fine. That's better. Professor at RPI. Judy Patrick is here from the New York Press Association.
Yay.
And Alan Shartok is here. You are also there at panel@wamc.org.
And we hope everybody will remember to put something in the lockbox. And you can do that by going to wamc.org. Of course, if you wanted to call 1-800-323-9262, you could.
Yeah, you could do that, but the online is nice, right?
Yeah, online is nice. Yeah.
Keeps the office, the front office people less disgruntled.
Sure. They're on the back.
Keeping them gruntled.
They're making their breakfast now.
Anyway, there were these letters that we got.
Oh, yeah, there were
those.
Okay,
yes.
Thanks. Thanks,
yes.
Uncle Ray.
Yes.
Okay. Amazon in Queens. Panel, I get that Senator Gianaris, who was recently appointed to a council, this is very interesting, that can veto the Amazon deal, may do just that. But why is the governor who can remove him from the panel hesitating to do so? It's the beginning of his third term, so it's hard to see Cuomo losing any political clout by taking Gianaris out. Okay, let me explain this to you. As a very knowledgeable political scientist that I am, this council that has life or death over the Amazon deal, three members, I believe, the governor formally appoints the members of the council. But it's de rigueur that when Andrea Stewart Cousins, who is the head of the Senate now, Senate Democrats, recommends, are you following, Judy? Mm-hmm. Recommends to the governor that Gianaris be put on, it is just going to get done, except that the governor made news on our show I don't want to talk about the New York Times having said, quoted the Brian Lehrer show in New York City, and then said, on another radio show.
Not that he's bitter at all. Yeah, yeah.
On another radio, I would never say that.
So no. What did he say?
Okay, yeah, that's, thank you, Judy. He also, so here's, the governor said, it's almost de rigueur that I appoint, I reserve the power not to appoint him to that council. So now it's getting real dirty.
Ooh, wow.
Don't you
I
see?
Love it when you speak French.
I know the de rigueur.
Maybe that's inappropriate. Okay, so that is the answer,
the
Bob, to your question. I think Cuomo has not been gentle about Gianaris, to your answer. He's really gone after him here. And Gianaris, when he got, as for him, these guys are watching each other. When he got on the show this morning with
that you
me,
taped this morning that has yet to air.
Yes, that's right. You know the first thing he said? He said, how's your new friend, Governor Cuomo?
Yeah.
So
they're taking notes.
Everybody's taking notes.
I'll tell you, Alan, a lot of people who've heard me on the radio come to me and say, you know, ask Alan what's going on with that Cuomo stuff, his new friend.
I don't know. For 8 years, the guy didn't talk to me. Right? For 8 years, this is probably the last time he will talk
to
me.
Yeah, right?
Okay. So for 8 years, he didn't talk to me. And then all of a sudden, one day, Ian, our wonderful news director, is knocking at the door, says, come out, come out. Governor wants to be on the air. So I came out. We had him on. And now it's been 12 weeks in a row that he has come on for a half an hour. And, you know, he just does it. Now, if you were me, would you say, go away, Governor? No, you would not.
You can't do that.
You couldn't do that because...
He's
the governor, and every time he opens his mouth, he makes news. Even in some news, major newspapers like the New York Times, where they say, on another interradio interview.
for what it's worth, they've been great conversations.
Yeah,
I've really
fun.
Enjoyed
they're
I've
fun.
Learned a lot about New
and
York.
They're very, they remind me a lot of dealing with Papa for all of those years. It was great fun.
I agree. There's a... Every now and then you're like, oh, that sounds like Dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he does. I mean, you know, he both reveres his father. Here's a little psychoanalysis for you. He both reveres his father, but he also competes with him. So I think there's with the memory. So I think that that's a fair.
Well, Gianaris has to be responding to his constituents. I mean, there has to be some kind of groundswell of opposition, I would think, by some of his constituents.
Sure.
And they're telling him, hey, I'm going to lose my home because everybody's going to start selling, and then what do I do?
Sure.
You know, I also think some of it is the demographics. So if I'm a politician sitting there, and we're talking about a whole lot of new people coming in and a whole lot of the base I've been building for years going out,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, from
that,
a personal point
of view.
So, I'd be really curious how the politics versus the economics are really playing
well,
in that
yeah.
whole situation.
What was the name of the famous guy, Jim, the famous political guy in England who said to his... He said to his constituency, hey, I'm supposed to be a leader. I'm going to lead you. And if you don't like it, throw me out of office. And that is exactly what they did. They threw him out of office. So, you know, these politicians have to put their fingers up in the air and see which way the wind is blowing. And they better be right. The real problem is when half of them want one thing and the other half want the other thing and are willing to, you know, take vengeance on them after that. Okay, Barbara says, zero tolerance really works, rarely works. Okay, it is totally naive to assume that this situation is limited to two officials in Virginia. How many hundreds of local, state, and federal elected officials have a blackface incident, in quotes, blackface, somewhere in their past? The appropriate response cannot be that they all have to resign. If they acknowledge their bad behavior, we need to provide an opportunity for restorative justice. Well, that's a very interesting question.
It is, and it is something that we have to grapple with because on the one hand, you have the whole explosion of Me Too, which is a dynamic that has really changed the landscape for a lot of misogynistic politicians out there. And you also have, you know, Black Lives Matter. It's a different world out there. People are not going to stand by and allow their groups to be basically denigrated the way that these politicians have done.
But you know, it's a moving target.
Yes.
There are some people who got out right away because somebody pointed a finger at them. Who would not be getting out?
Al Franken?
That's right. It's a very good example. A very good example who would not be getting out right now under the present rules of the game, which are evolving as we speak.
Yeah, I'm going to tap into my inner mother and say, yeah, it's all well and good to say I'm sorry, but really you shouldn't have done whatever you did in the first place. And I don't think we're really talking about that. And I don't think the media or the politicians are talking enough to the next generation about why blackface is bad, and because so many people just seem clueless about it. And, I think it's a conversation that really needs to happen. And some you're seeing some of it, but you're not seeing nearly enough of it.
It seems pretty clear that Democrats in Virginia don't know exactly how to handle the situation after Northam's revelations, and then the lieutenant governor, and then the attorney general. All Democrats. Now, the line of succession, and I'm sure you guys have talked about this week.
Now, it goes to the Speaker, who's a Republican.
Right.
Who won on a coin toss.
Yeah, that's
exact 50-50 vote.
So,
wow, well, no, actually, I think that was the Senate.
Jim, I thought that was Cox. It wasn't Cox who won.
It was the House?
I thought it was Cox.
I thought it was the Senate. But maybe I'm wrong. I'm very frequently wrong. So,
Cox is Speaker because the Republican won this House seat in the.
Right.
But here's a larger context, right? We have somebody in the White House who's been guilty of racism and misogyny.
Terrible,
right? But we're going to hold these politicians to a different standard.
Grab women by the, you know what's, because they like it, unquote, because they like it. It's the most insulting thing you could possibly say, and so untrue. It's amazing.
I think the understatement of the week goes to the leader of the Virginia Legislative Black Caucus, who said, "We've got a lot to digest." I think that's everybody's waiting to see what they will say. And allegedly, today is the day they will make more definitive comments. But we've got a lot to digest. Understates.
Well, which is interesting because the leader of the congressional of the Black Caucus obviously was interested in seeing the lieutenant governor take over. Lieutenant governor being of color. Then when that happened, they were really walking a tightrope as to what ought to be the right thing to do. I saw the Reverend Al Sharpton on the TV this morning, don't you know? He was talking very righteously, which I agree with him about blackface and taking the punishment and all the rest of it. But I don't know if anybody remembers Tawana Brawley. And whether or not he owed an apology to people for what he did there. And he's still walking, still surviving.
So the question I have, and again, you know, this may just be my naivety, but I wonder what would have happened if Northam won this first and said, listen, you know, I did. So I wonder how much is the denial and how much is the act? Because if he had said, listen, when I was 24, growing up in a very, very different Virginia that was, you know, mostly segregated, I didn't know better. You know, I grew up, I grew out of it, I became a Democrat to help fix this problem. You know, I mean, so if people would, you know, you just kind of feel like the first thing a politician does is deny.
Well, he
and
blew
then
it.
Goes into
he actually blew
control.
It.
And if
he really blew
right,
it because he said one thing and then he said the other thing and then he went back to the other thing.
The cover-up is always worse than the crime.
Right. It just seems like we got to have a model that says, tell us the truth and maybe things will be better.
We need to take a quick break here. This is the Roundtable Panel. Jim Hendler, Judy Patrick, Dan Irizarry, Alan Shartok.
And everybody, we're still doing that round. We're still doing that lockbox and we really need you. You can do it at wamc.org.
We'll be back with more of your letters in a moment. Oh, yeah. Lovely music. That's Neil Hefti. I think that's Phil Woods on alto sax there. It's
really?
Uncredited.
Phil Woods?
The Phil Woods.
Again, Ray Graff is like...
I'm not sure about that. It just sounds
brilliant.
Like Phil Woods.
It
you
did
know
sound
I mean?
An awful lot like him.
Oh, cut it out, Shartok. The email address is panel@wamc.org. Alan is here, Judy Patrick, Jim Hendler, Dan Irizarry, and more of your letters.
Okay. And our friend Mark, who is a very knowledgeable guy about the stuff, says upstate secession. If upstate were to secede from New York City, we would create a new state with the economic strength, get this, of West Virginia.
All right.
The vast majority... Hopefully dear Dr. Shartok, I come from West Virginia, and I severely resent that you're
pulling me. Take me home, country roads.
Yeah. What? Take me home, country roads.
John Denver.
No, that's good.
West Virginia,
I know,
Mountain Mama.
Yeah, I know.
Take me home.
Yeah. So, with the economic strength of West Virginia, the vast majority of revenues that fill the state coffers come from New York City and its surrounding counties. Again, revenues that fill the state coffers come from New York City and surrounding counties. Upstate is a net importer of state dollars. And that's Mark from Valencia, or is it Valati? Okay, so then, thank you. Can you just hand me those without fooling
around? I tend to agree. I mean, you can't really deny that
No, you blew it.
Sorry, Dan. They're collating papers. Dan, go ahead. You have the floor.
That's okay. I was just saying that everybody knows where the money flows from, and it's Wall Street, basically. And upstate New York experienced what the rest of the country did because industry changed. Mechanization and all that stuff, and
but the assemblyman from Western New York would say, Hawley, is it? He would say, but our needs are much less in upstate New York. We wouldn't need all of that the money for infrastructure in upstate compared to downstate. That's what he would say.
Where would the
How
work
do you know
come
what he'd
from?
Say?
Where is the work going to come from? Is it all going to be?
You got me swinging. It's not my idea, man. I don't
economy?
Know.
I don't think so.
Okay, more letters, Chief?
Well, why not?
Okay. Conrad says, upstate? Upstate begins where Metro North ends. I like it.
Poughkeepsie? What's that, Brewster? Or is it Poughkeepsie?
No, we have Wasaic. Right along the border between Connecticut and, you know, Massachusetts. It goes right up there. It stops at Wasaic. It used to make a right turn and go into Great Barrington, which is where it really ought to still go, but it doesn't because they made a runner's track out of it.
You're against the rail trails then?
No, I think you could coexist. You see, you try to trap me, but I get it. You could run right next to the choo-choo.
You know, as an upstate person, I have no idea what you're talking about, Alan.
All
those rail lines, don't know.
I think we should build a wall between upstate and downstate.
Should we?
I like it.
And should we have the Mexicans pay for it?
Canadians? I don't know.
This is sort of like the Brexit deal, right? It's, you know, we can't have Brexit until we can figure out whether we're putting a wall between North Ireland and South Ireland. We'll do the same thing in New York City. Yeah,
and TJ says...
Wall Street. Hey.
That's right.
I don't want to interrupt. TJ from Kerhonkson says... New York State Wall Street transaction tax. It's time, due to shortfall for New York State, to consider a 1 cent or so Wall Street transaction tax, a penny for every stock transaction. I believe in that. For whatever it's worth, I think that's a great idea, and we should do it. But there's always been objections to it, one way or another. But now that the Democrats are in control of the state Senate, maybe... Although it would really be interesting to see what Andrew does.
How friendly has Andrew been with the Senate Democrats now that they're in control? It seems there's some friction there.
Well,
the budget gets done.
I said that this morning in my interview, but I tell you, they all deny it. You know, it is that Andrea Stewart Cousins, who is a really gutsy lady, and it was terrific. She put Jean Arris on that three-person committee. And knowing that the governor wasn't going to like it one bit, but she still did it. And that would portend for me that there may be some rough edges, almost like sandpaper, between the two.
Mm.
Okay. And Deanne says, just a friendly reminder that Buffalo is locally known as Western New York, not upstate.
Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, you seem to get great...
It's true, because it's fascinating. I've been traveling around the state and talking to editors at small papers all over.
Because you're now the head person in terms of content in these papers.
And one of the things, they're very territorial about who they are, from Western New York, from Central New York, from Upstate New York, from the Hudson Valley. Some of them like to call themselves Upstate, but some people in Rochester, I don't think, consider themselves Upstate. And people in Buffalo definitely consider themselves from Western New York.
Well, what do those people in Rochester think of themselves as?
I think think Western New York.
That's interesting because that's on the cusp of Central New York. Yeah. Now we got a whole other question.
You know, you get the Finger Lakes regions. I mean, it's kind of like mini states.
Okay, so I'll give them the Finger Lakes.
When we do the data analysis for New York City, so you mentioned I run this data lab.
Yeah.
We've been doing a lot of looking at like New York medical data and things like that. And you've got these seven different regions and each different system has a slightly different way of defining them. But you've got North, Central, up by the lakes, down by the city, and you see very, very different trends. And I think it would be very hard to almost separate any of this.
Let's balkanize the whole state. We'll have like seven states.
Chop it up, baby.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, I have to interject here.
Medically, it'd be a lot easier.
I think it is true. I'm a upstater as of 30 years ago. Right. I grew up in New York City and have a fondness for New York City. I love it. But when you come upstate and you live upstate and you become acclimated, then you get a different perspective, right? So there is a bit of chauvinism on the part of legislators and people from New York City.
Which way?
When it comes,
you mean the New York City people or chauvinistic?
Yeah, New York City people.
I find the exact opposite.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Well, let me define it a little bit better. So as a Latino who's upstate New York, right? You kind of feel like all the attention is downstate because, of course, the numbers are down. We have 2 million Latinos or more in New York City. But there's still a population up here that really needs services. And so you're kind of competing with all that attention that is drawn to the plight of Latinos in New York City, and you have a hard time making the ask up here.
Well, that's interesting. So you're sort of being selfish from your own professional perspective.
Yes, I am.
I got it.
Thank you.
I got it. And you all missed the greatest moment I had, but I can't repeat it here again. Eric from upstate said, I am from Plattsburgh, which is definitely upstate, and live in New Paltz. I would rather call upstate north of Albany the center of the north and south. Hudson Valley is Westchester to Albany, western New York, west of Rochester, Syracuse, and then, of course, the city. And that's Eric from somewhere. Got it.
I would call Plattsburgh North Country.
Okay.
You can't get much more north than that, right?
Yeah, you can't. You can't get further upstate.
And we have a major station there, which a lot of people listen to in Plattsburgh. I can tell you that right now.
And Pat Bradley's stationed up there.
She is.
I think you
and we love
North
all you
country
people
reporter
in Plattsburgh.
We do.
Please put into the lockbox.
Yeah. Okay. Well, speaking of the lockbox, you can do it right now at wamc.org. Anyway, Eric, thank you for that. Who's from Plattsburgh and obviously listening on our wonderful Plattsburgh station.
Or online.
You always have to sort of undercut me, don't you?
I think there's a digital divide in this room right now.
I think you're right. You know what, Dan?
You should hear it every day when I go down to that side of the room down there in the newsroom.
We argue sometimes, you and I.
And Ray, Ray's very upset. I can't really.
No, don't bring up. Oh, no, no. I veto this. Let's move on to the next
one.
We'll take a vote. All those people who think I ought to bring it up, raise your hand.
No.
Okay, then I won't. All right. Okay. Okay, and
that's bad news, man.
Wow.
Next.
Can we take a break now?
Next.
Yeah.
What's a little bug? Okay. Jared says, "Hi, Jared in Albany here. I think it would be good to point out that Trump came right out before the midterm that he was going to move forward legislation on a middle class tax cut. If I were a Democrat running for office, I would be blasting him about that. It's more evident than ever that was simply a ploy to get more votes, and I think it just shows what a liar he is." And that's Jared.
You're here.
And Andrew says, "Upstate, downstate split. Dear panel, my family has a joke. Upstate is anywhere north of wherever we currently live."
That's great. Wow, I want to use that.
Regards, Andrew. I like this.
That's a great one.
That's a great one.
Yeah, that was a good
That'd
one.
That'd be a great T-shirt.
Yeah. I got to see. Okay, here.
What are you doing?
I'm trying to get a little spittle on my hands so that I can warm separate the I can separate the, you know, the papers.
Check, please.
George says 2020. Good morning. I think that way too much energy and worry is being put into who can beat Trump. Based on the last 2 years, Trump is beating himself. He doesn't need any help. He will self-destruct in the next 2 years. In 2016, one could only speculate as to his unfitness in office.
Dangerous talk.
Dan, you're shaking your head.
Dangerous talk. I hate when people
unfortunately,
just think it's a fait accompli, and it's really not.
Now you used French again.
I did.
Wow, this is very impressive.
He has a very good chance of winning again. He has a very good
chance.
Why do you
say that?
Because I think if he can keep the same formula of the 40%, plus grab off a couple of those same states that he grabbed off before, he'll win again, even if he doesn't win the popular vote. I think the worst thing anybody can be thinking right now is that anybody will beat Trump. I just don't think that's true. And I think anybody who thinks that is not helping the cause.
I agree 100%. And I think that you can see what he's doing right now when he brings up the abortion issue. He is calling out to his troops, and his troops are mobilizing, and it's getting really ugly already.
Yep.
And George says, good morning. I think that way too much energy and worry is being put into who can be Trump. We did that, right?
Right.
Yes. That's because you guys interrupted me in the middle of it.
Oh, sorry,
in
sir.
2016.
Just go right ahead.
In 2016, one can only speculate to his unfitness of office. 2020 will provide 4 years of evidence. To that point, we now need a serious, intelligent, honest communicator who can relay what we need to go before it's too late.
I do have to interrupt you now because we're overdue to get out for news.
What about this last letter from
Russell? You'll have to wait till after the break, sir. Just cool your jets. It's the Roundtable at WAMC. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Thursday morning, 10:05. Ray in for Joe. Our email address is panel@wamc.org. Judy Patrick is here, Jim Hendler, Danny Rosari, and the irascible Alan Shartok. Alan, a few more emails, and then we'll get on to the next topic.
But before we do, I want to tell you, this is where we live, folks. Anybody who's enjoying it, anybody who tunes into the Roundtable every morning, we need your help. Let's get to the lockbox and finish this all off. We're over 700,000.
Yikes, that's
more
great.
More than we've ever had before. Going in, I'd love to see this end up as a one-day fun drive. So wherever you are, you can just go to WAMC.org, or if you want to, you could pick up the phone and dial 1-800-323-9262. Okay,
right.
So over to you, Ray. You want me to read these?
All right, over to me, and then I'll pass it back over to you. We have some letters.
Okay, it's just sort of like a good basketball team.
Right.
You know, back and forth.
You mean not the Knicks.
Martin says, standards. The Democrats need to adopt a uniform standard for resolving alleged unethical behavior immediately. They immediately called on Governor Northam to resign for wearing blackface, but not Attorney General Herring for the same thing. They immediately condemned Kavanaugh before hearing Dr. Ford testify, but hardly said a thing about Lieutenant Governor Fairfax, who is facing similar egregious allegations. The double standard and selective due process in condemning people is chaotic and wrong. We need a universal procedure for dealing with this, and that's from Martin. Thank you, Martin. And then we heard from Beth, who said, follow the money. Dear panel, for the last 2 years, we have heard Alan say, follow the money. This is going, well, I hardly invented that.
No.
When these Woodward and
Bernstein, were you in that movie?
Yeah.
For you.
This is going to take on a new meaning when disgruntled Trump supporters get less than desirable tax return results. It may be the only way out of the circus in 2020. You know, Jim, you're shaking your head no.
So if you look at the tax numbers, if you look at who's going to pay more when.
Yeah.
Trump's base starts to pay through the nose in 2021.
Yeah, on purpose.
On purpose. I mean, absolutely. And red states get significantly less hit than blue states. We were talking about some of that stuff before. I mean, that was the most politically crafted tax bill ever. It was unbelievable. And you look at the data, you look at the demographics, you look at where the numbers are, you look at things were literally delayed for 2 years before they rolled in because they knew that that was going to hit his base.
It's an economic IED that's set to blow up just as he takes office, if that happens. And God forbid.
Yeah. And if he loses, if he takes office, it won't matter because he's not up for re-election. And if he loses office, it leaves the next incoming president is suddenly.
Well, if he loses and the Senate goes Democratic, I'm pretty well assured, I think, that they're going to visit this tax bill again.
No,
right? Okay. So that was Beth. Okay. And then we heard from Russell, who said, a facilitated discussion. What I believe would be best for all is that those who have been accused of wearing blackface at one time or another participated in a facilitated discussion together on national television that basically focused on why they allegedly did what they did then and what they have to say about that nine. And that's from Russ in Greenfield, Massachusetts.
All right. And that's we are up to date on the letters. Panel at WAMC.org here on the roundtable panel. President Trump lashing out at Adam Schiff, Democratic chair of the House Intelligence Committee, after Schiff announced plans to launch a broad new investigation looking at Russian interference in the 2016 election and President Trump's foreign financial interests. Trump says Schiff has no basis for doing that and is calling the California Democrat a political hack who's trying to build a name for himself. He's also labeling the efforts presidential harassment and claiming they hurt the country. Trump spoke during a White House event to announce his pick to serve as the next president of the World Bank. Schiff said Wednesday the investigation would examine issues including the scope and scale of Russian intervention in the 2016 presidential election and whether foreign actors have sought to hold leverage over Trump, his family, or associates. Judy Patrick, you've been quiet. What do you think?
Too quiet.
You know, I think the Democrats are taking a cautious approach to this. They're trying to slowly build the case and look at it. They're not. I applaud them for trying to find out the facts first and proceed deliberately.
Yeah.
And figure out what is worthy of being investigated and what's not worthy. And so it's not viewed as partisan as it could be. If on the first day in office they started issuing subpoenas, I think they're trying to do this in a rational way. And a lot of this stuff needs to be investigated. Republicans sat on it too long, and I think every American wants to know how much the Trump financial organization was involved in outside interest and if it's influencing how he's acting as president.
I mean, isn't Mueller doing that, though?
Who knows what Mueller is doing?
We see an inauguration committee is going to get at some of that,
isn't it? The inauguration committee and how much money the Trump organization was loaned from foreign banks. I mean, it is something that's pertinent to the American public.
The emoluments trial is proceeding slowly. There's all this stuff building.
You know, I grew up on the West Side, and I grew up on the West Side of Manhattan, and I watched Jerry Nadler come up through the ranks. He had a little organization called the Kids, and they would go around and they would take over political.
Jerry's Kids.
That's funny, right? Yeah, they would go around and they would take over political clubs. And he was single-minded, and this guy takes no prisoners. Mm-hmm. He's very, very tough.
Yeah. He's impressive.
He's
impressive.
He is going to do this along with Schiff and all the others, and they're going to do it in the right way. And if there's information out there now, one of the things that's so impressive, I think, about Nadler is that he says he's keeping a subpoena in his pocket. So that when Whitaker comes on, you know, the make-believe attorney general, that he will pull the subpoena out if he's not answering the questions truthfully and issue the subpoena right there and then. Now, that's interesting.
And Whitaker is, I believe, supposed to be on the Hill tomorrow.
And they're scared to death about it because apparently they've been holding mock sessions in which he has to answer these questions that they're going to be asking him. Mm-hmm. He really was a joke.
The questions are whether or not he was ever asked what he would do in terms of the Mueller investigation in exchange for his appointment. And those are really, that's a hard question.
So will he lie is the question.
Exactly.
I think the Republicans need to make sure they have plenty of towels next to him. Did you see the way he was sweating during that press conference?
No.
Oh, my God. He made Marco Rubio look like, you know.
Got the James Brown thing going?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's another interesting part of this Schiff stuff, which hasn't been as big in the news. I was down in D.C. on Tuesday talking to a lot of my insider friends, and they say what's really interesting is Schiff has taken a lot of stuff that Nunes was not giving to Mueller
and given it to
Mueller, which means that Mueller can now look at their testimony to Congress and the testimony to him. And there's a lot of people real nervous about that because, you know, that That's perjury. That's a federal crime.
That's what they want to get him on.
And this comes at a time when people were speculating the Mueller investigation is almost over. I don't think so.
That speculation has been going for several months now.
But I think if he's going to get a trove of information from the House Intelligence Committee, that's going to slow things up, and we won't get that report anytime soon.
It's hard to believe that the House Intelligence Committee has stuff that Mueller doesn't have.
Agreed.
I think Mueller has got incredible amounts of information. But we're going to see, for us to speculate on what he's got or not.
What I think it is the House will have words spoken to them that he hasn't seen, that he can now cross-correlate with what he's got, and now we can start looking for inconsistencies. And that's got to be scary.
I take your meaning.
People.
I do.
What really terrifies me, though, is let's say that all signs point to collusion, corruption. Is his base going to shift at all?
So far the answer is no. Right. Somebody's going to write me a letter and say, oh, well, there's a 5% difference right now. But so far, the hardcore is still the hardcore, and it's there. And that's what he's counting on. And that's why he can't afford to lose them. That's why the sort of terrible anti-abortion rhetoric and all of the rest of the stuff he's doing, because he knows if he makes a false move, some of those right-wing commentators are going to come after him, and there may be a little bit of a peel-off.
And that's why the Democratic message needs to be about more than just get rid of Trump.
Yes,
it needs to be about something affirmative, something that talks about how the middle class has been hollowed out and how that we have to restore them to their former prominence.
Sure.
Something other than get this lunatic out, which I don't disagree with, but it's not enough to convince people who really need to shift.
How about maybe he'll lose the anti-abortion opponents or anti-abortion advocates because they know they've got the Supreme Court locked up, so they don't need to worry about who's going to be president from here going on.
I don't think so, Judy. I think that's sort of expecting too much from people in terms of their knowledge of what government is and does, and the Supreme Court will be there for them and the rest. I don't think so.
Well,
think these people are dyed in the wool. We see them. They've been around this country for a long time. If you took a look from the Civil War on up, you will see that, there's been this hardcore group of right-wing dissidents.
The infanticide argument,
sure.
I sometimes do what you do, Alan. I have to look at the other networks to kind of, flesh it out a little bit. But Liz Cheney was, I think that's how you pronounce it, right?
Well, it depends.
That's the way you...
I've always thought it's...
That's
I've,
what
always,
you
I've always thought it's Cheney. I've been corrected on it. I've heard them say it, but some people say Cheney, but I think it's Cheney.
Well, she was on that network basically yelling about infanticide.
Yeah.
And nothing brings a group together like, that.
A little old-fashioned right writer.
So anyone want to take a poll now? Which word we hear more in the 2020 election from the Republican side, infanticide or socialism?
Or wall.
Yeah, the socialism thing, we got a lot of mail.
That accusation of socialism is going to be what Trump tries to ride
We got a lot of mail on socialism the other day. And people have put words in my mouth saying I said that Stalin was a socialist. No, on the contrary, I said exactly the opposite about that. I said he was a communist leader. He was really a dictator, whatever you want to call him. But socialism, when I went to Hunter in the Bronx, Norman Thomas was invited, and the administration, I believe, wouldn't let him on, let him there, because he was the socialist. Of course, we've come a long way since that, and almost half the elementary schools, I'm exaggerating, in New York are now named for Norman Thomas.
Ask a millennial. I mean, that has been the big difference. Millennials don't have a problem with
not
that
at all.
Term. Of course, they're riddled with or saddled with a huge student debt, but that's important to note.
Oh, yeah. The email address here. Thank you very much. I'm drifting away, listening to Neil Hefti in my head. Panel at WAMC.org is the email address. Panel at WAMC.org. For the second time in 2 weeks, Massachusetts Democratic U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren apologized Wednesday for claiming Native American identity on multiple occasions earlier in her career. The move followed a report that she listed her race as American Indian in her own handwriting on a 1986 registration card for the Texas State Bar. Warren expected to formally announce the run for the presidency on Saturday. She didn't rule out the possibility of other documents in which she identified as Native American.
A couple of things. One, you would think that it was time to stick a fork in this candidacy because of this American Indian thing, but you would be wrong. And the reason is that Elizabeth Warren has, in all the polling, a very top position among progressives in this country. People like her, and they've liked her from last time out when they thought she should have run. But in any case, she's in it, and she's not going to get out of it. And I think that the people who are in her corner think this is all a bunch of nonsense about the American Indian thing.
As a mother, not a very good apology. She was sorry. She's very my God, I can't talk.
That's okay.
She's very pinpointing what she was apologizing for, and it wasn't a broad apology. It was an apology that she may have confused people about the difference between ancestry and tribal membership, and she wasn't really going beyond that. And she really needs to discuss why she was saying this in the first place, and what it means, and why it may be perceived as taking on this, and she shouldn't have done it. That it was a very bad apology.
Judy, she never should have done any of this. This was just dumb. You wonder, these are the people who are capable of having their finger on the nuclear button and who are going to be running the country, and you would think that their brains would get them above it. But again, you could almost describe it as a youthful indiscretion. She wanted to get into law school. She wanted to get into the bar. So she put this stuff down, and pretty soon you begin to believe your own stuff.
We only have a couple of minutes here. Dan Arizari.
What is there to say about Elizabeth Warren? She is an incredible mind. She has an incredible platform, and it's a shame, but she's another victim of Trump's branding. He branded her early on. It's like a tar pit.
And what was
every
wrong
move
with
she
Pocahontas
makes, she goes
anyway?
Further.
Well, and partly she explains this, that she had always been told that she had part American Indian ancestry, and that she was proud of it. And it came at a time when some women in her life were close to death, her mother and some favorite aunts, and she thought that she was proud of it, and she was just trying to put it down. She wasn't trying to gain favor, she
well,
said.
Well, David Cornsilk, who's a member of the Cherokee Nation, said, "The conclusion I draw is she may not have gotten benefit from it, but I believe she certainly was trying to."
Well,
I was going to say the
Oklahoma.
That community certainly did not support her, and it was very stunning that you'd think they would not be the community that wants to see Trump reelected, but what do I know?
Well, I guess the question is, Alan.
Yes, sir.
Do the Democrats, as they get ready through the primaries and find their candidate, they really want to find someone who is electable here, right?
That's right. Now, the last poll that I saw or heard about it, to be perfectly honest, was that Joe Biden was leading the pack by far.
I saw that.
And that's because people like him. They like the man, and they consider him to be moderate. And as I said before, when you look at the congressional elections, the people who overwhelmingly won those congressional seats were moderates. Cortez is getting all of the publicity, but, it has to be somebody who is likable but who doesn't put his foot in it. And that's, I think, what he's well known for.
All right. We have to end it there. I want to thank Judy Patrick of the New York Press Association for being here.
She's terrific.
Jim Hendler of RPI. Dan Arizari, of chairman of the Capital District Latinos. Alan Shartok, our own president and CEO. And once again, thank you for listening to the Roundtable. Lots of good stuff ahead on this program.
Oh, yeah.
We'll take a break and get to it.
Oh, yeah.